activate the view screen, and turn on your universal translators, because it is time for another Galactic Netcast. Brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It's Thursday, September 12th, 2013, and welcome again to a Galactic Netcast. This is the Alien Invasion number 82. From Waterloo, Iowa, I'm Dave Peanut Nelson joining me, and I said Peanut Nelson. Joining me this evening from Wausau, Wisconsin is Brad Butter Ludwig and Anessa Jelly Time, Peanut Butter Jelly Time Moines from Denton, Texas. What's up, guys?
Peanut butter jelly.
Peanut butter jelly. Peanut butter jelly. Peanut butter jelly. Peanut butter jelly with a baseball bat.
Stop, 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 stop. Stop.
Aww.
See what you started, Anessa?
It's what I do.
Yeah. So is there a special meaning behind this? I know it's peanut butter jelly time. Was that stuck
in your... It's always peanut butter jelly time.
Was it stuck in your head or something? And you just had to get it out?
It's always in my head.
So you live your life with that song on repeat in your head.
Who doesn't?
Exactly. Well, it's not always in there, but more often than not, that's one of the more common things I get stuck in my head.
That would drive me crazy.
I know.
Who says I'm not?
This is from last week's show, and I added it to the soundboard. This is Brad.
And whack off, because, you know, sometimes...
You gotta whack off.
Yeah, I know, exactly. All right, so this is the show where we talk about things and beings from elsewhere in the universe and their appearances in film, TV, video games, comic books, science, on the street, and in real life. The show is divided into three sections, the news, the creature feature, that's the spotlight of a certain kind of alien, and our picks for the week, that's like movies and books and stuff that we've read and listened to and watched and that kind of thing. For our audio subscribers, if you'd like to see us record the show live, just follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Google Plus. So if you guys are ready, let's get this thing started.
In the news,
Bradley, you have the very first story of the day.
Before I start, I have a recommendation. If you're going to do the Let's Get It Started, you need to get that little clip of the Black Eyed Peas. Let's get it started.
Let's get
in
it
here.
Started in
here. Uh huh.
No, we don't have
no?
to.
No. All right. Hey, let's talk about the Bureau, XCOM Declassified. It's it's in a long line of video games, and I remember a buddy of mine had it on the first generation PlayStation, and it's a kind of a turn-based strategy game with the whole concept of XCOM is a group that investigate alien crashes on Earth and, you know, keep the planet safe from alien menaces. So what they've done is they've created a game called The Bureau, XCOM Declassified, but people are wondering if it's a follow-up government conspiracy.
What?
Yeah, that's what I said. But as I read it, it made a little bit more sense.
Like a for real game, like a for real government conspiracy, like a real life government conspiracy, like.
Well, we'll get into it a little further on in the story. It'll make a little bit more sense in a second here. So the game is set during the Cold War, and the Bureau allows you to play the game in the role of a United States government agent, using your tact and guile to thwart alien occupation. Now, the game is like set in the early 50s, so it has kind of a early 50s is a little too late for noir, but it has that, you know, that 1950s gumption that you'll see portrayed in movies. What's kind of peculiar, though, is that the game about the UFO conspiracy came out a week within a week of the federal government's declassification of the Area 51 documents. So what's also even more strange is that the man heading the public relations side of the game's release is a man named Nick Pope, and he's the former head of the British Ministry of Defense's now defunct UFO desk.
I knew that name sounded familiar.
Hmm.
Interesting.
So, what people are saying is the Bureau must be a government ploy to steer our fragile minds away from the real Area 51 and more toward the creepy, unbelievable aliens that inhabit pop culture. So, during the promotional interview for the last game in the XCOM series, Pope told reporters that Britain had weapon capabilities specifically geared toward an alien invasion. And if he's manning the UFO desk for the Ministry of Defense for Britain, you'd think he'd know. And they also say, and he's quoted as saying, they say I really didn't leave the ministry in 2006. They say either this game is designed to throw people off or it's part of acclimatization process. Somehow I'm helping governments use this as a way to slowly getting the message out. They're here, but don't panic. Now, actually, what's also very interesting about this is, in a way, the government is involved in the game. I mean, in real life, not as just a part of the story, but in real life. The U.S. Army funded the game. Brain stopped working. America's Army, a first-person shooter funded and released entirely by the U.S. Army, is a known recruiting tool that shows off to gamers how cool of a job it is to be in the military. So what people are saying is that the government has already set foot into the gaming arena, so it's not that far out of line to say, okay, we've got this game here, the government might still be involved with it, and they're trying to make us not panic if aliens actually, if we finally release the truth about aliens.
So you
it's
think,
all a part of this slow process to get people to not freak out.
So you think that since the government's already had experience in making video games, that they talked to the developers of this one and said, hey, can we help you out? And then kind of in return, they gave them some like real life information, and it's kind of like their way of, it's like propaganda, like subtle propaganda.
That seems to be what people are thinking. So that's the conspiracy theory that's coming out of this.
Makes a lot of sense.
It kind of makes sense, but I think it's just like a random string of coincidences. If you think about it, this guy used to work for the Ministry of Defense under the capacity of the UFO desk. The guy wanted to do something else but was interested in UFOs. Obviously he was, otherwise he probably wouldn't have taken the job. So he ended up getting a job being a part of the PR for an alien-based game, you know, still kind of sticking to his interests. So, I mean, it could be just coincidence.
Do you think he consulted? Do you think he consulted this company who made this game? Because he would have a lot of information, right? He would, because he manned the desk for a lot of years, right?
Well, just because you're behind a desk doesn't necessarily mean that you know what's going on beyond the desk. I mean, you'll probably see paperwork and stuff, but you're not actually out there in the field.
The other thing, too, is if you're working for the Ministry of Defense, or you worked for, there has to be some kind of, I mean, he can't give away all the secrets. I mean,
but
if he knows stuff.
Didn't they declassify a bunch of that stuff, though, already in Britain?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is the Area 51 stuff the U.S. has. I don't know how much of the British stuff they actually have declassified.
I don't know.
I honestly don't know.
Yeah. What I was thinking was maybe.
But all the stuff that we've seen that's been declassified has not been like, here's an actual picture of an alien, and here's what their physiology is, and here's blah, blah, blah. It's all, you know.
It's all,
here's some
it's all blacked out. It's all like words. Let's play a puzzle. Let's put together this puzzle.
Pretty much.
You know what we should do is we should like find some of these documents that are like heavily redacted, right? And turn them into Mad Libs.
Yes.
You know, alien invasion Mad Libs. You get a copy of the document, and then you fill in.
You're like,
the words.
You need a pronoun, you need a verb, adjective, adverb.
Alien invasion Mad Libs.
So we're gonna add this to our list of things, ideas that we've had that we've
cool
never.
Cool ideas actually... of things we should sell.
Yeah, or things that we haven't followed through with, like these great ideas that we always come up with.
It's a matter of time, I think, more than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still working on the t-shirt thing, so I haven't forgotten.
All right. Well, this is a very interesting story. There's a lot of bits and pieces here that you could, like you said, you could really piece them together and come up with something. You know, you're looking for, you know, if you'll always find what you think you're looking for, right? You're always, if you're looking for conspiracies, you're going to find conspiracies.
And, while I'm at it here, I'm going to, and this is for the folks that are looking at the video portion of this. Here is one of the aliens off to the side here. Looks like he's wearing some kind of suit, and you're getting the backside view, as it were.
And not
the back of the head.
Yeah, just clarify, Brad. When you say backside, back of the head, not somebody's butt.
Yeah, no, he's dropped his trousers and there's just cheeks right there.
Booty, 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 booty everywhere.
Just kidding. No, there's not. Also, here's another view of scientists that have been horribly injured and kind of the old school 1950s, you know, here's like the big control panels with switches and gauges and all sorts of stuff, and you've got your hard-boiled detective-looking agent there, standing there with a big shotgun, but he's not wearing his coat, but by golly, he's wearing the vest, tie, and fedora.
That's perfect.
His big shotgun. But I'm going to just play a little snippet of the video here, and obviously you're not going to be able to hear the audio of this, but this is supposed to be like found footage of, you know, some of the, not necessarily all the gameplay, but, you know, teasing what it's all about.
Yep. It's the story part of the game.
Yeah. And how, you know, they've found aliens, they're here, and now they've got to figure out what to do.
God, whenever you say we're here, I'm waiting for you to say we're here, we're queer.
Get used to it.
Get used to it.
I'm not sure if these aliens are in fact gay. I guess it really
I mean, they could be,
doesn't
well,
matter.
The aliens are queer in that they're different.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true.
Queer doesn't necessarily mean gay.
Absolutely.
Gay doesn't necessarily mean homosexual.
Gay means
so
happy.
There you go.
In 1962, gay meant happy. So it all comes
absolutely
back around again.
So there you go. There's that.
Good work, Brad. I'm proud of you, buddy.
Did you like the story, Dave?
Yes.
Is that what it is?
It was a very good story. So, queer happy aliens.
Yes.
XCOM. I love the name XCOM. It just sounds badass. XCOM.
Yeah, it does.
You know?
Just like X-Men.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah. X-Files. All right. We done with that?
Yes, I believe we are, and we can move on to the next story, Dave.
All right. This is one that I'm very, very happy about. I'm happy to report Stargate is to receive a movie reboot trilogy planned. Now, Roland Emmerich has confirmed that he intends to reboot, not have a sequel, but reboot the Stargate franchise with a new movie trilogy. He told Digital Spy, we went to GM, who has the rights, and proposed to them to do a sequel, but as a reboot. And reboot it as a movie, and then do three parts, And he says that pretty soon they'll have to look for a writer and to start. So that's encouraging news. Plans to reunite stars Kurt Russell and James Spader for a sequel to Stargate, which spawned three TV spinoff shows, has been scuttled by Time, according to Emmerich. The actors look totally different, and it wouldn't work, he stated. What else? There are those people who make mainstream commercial films in order to further their career so that they can one day get to make the movie they've always dreamed of making. And then there's those people who really, really love mainstream movies. And Roland's one of those people. He approaches these films with the same amount of love and passion as Scorsese does when he does an art picture. I don't know who said that. Doesn't really say here who said that.
That was a follow-up quote from a gentleman named... trying to get his Dean Devlin.
Oh yeah, that's his partner.
That was his the co-creator of Stargate.
Yeah. So you guys excited about this? They're rebooting Stargate?
I've honestly only ever seen the movie.
You got to watch this. The series is really, really good. All three of them are
on the list of things to watch.
Get on it, Maureen's.
I love the movie. I saw it in the theater when it came out, and I just thought it was the greatest thing ever. I've got the DVD version. Actually, I've got the Blu-ray because I wanted the commentary and stuff. I absolutely love the film. And I've seen some episodes here and there, just like, you know, jumping through time, as it were, for the first series. Never saw Stargate Atlantis, never really appealed to me, and I never saw Stargate Universe.
I was hesitant to watch the series for the longest time. Like, I never watched it when it was on. I always saw the very end of it. Like, I think it led into another series on sci-fi that I watched. So I always saw the end. You know how your show comes on and you see like the last few minutes, last few seconds of a show. I always saw that. But when I got laid off from work 2 years ago, I had plenty of time on my hands and I had a Netflix account. So at the time, all the Stargate shows were on Netflix. So I just burned right through them. And it's a really good, all three series are very, very good. So I'm just wondering how they'll do it differently. Because, you know, reboots usually try to recreate the same thing, but in a different way. So I'm wondering if they're going to put a different twist on it.
I'm wondering how they're going to make it a trilogy. Because, I mean, Roland Emmerich, did either he or Dean...
Devlin?
Devlin, did they have any hand in the original TV series?
No, they didn't. They weren't involved in the TV series.
Okay, so... Essentially, then, I mean, it would stand to reason that if they were going to do a trilogy, they wouldn't do anything from the TV shows then.
No.
Because they didn't, you know, they wouldn't really pull anything from that. And so it'd be interesting to see how they take the original concept of the first hour and a half, 2 hour film and stretch it into three movies.
Yeah.
That's what I'm kind of concerned about.
I mean,
Stargate to me is just, it's a great film. You have the character development of Kurt Russell's character, who lost his son and is just completely devastated and really is going – he wants to go there to die. I mean, his whole – that's a suicide mission for him. He's ready to die because he's lost everything. And you've got the Daniel character, who is just completely – from an academic standpoint is completely fascinated by this whole thing and the opportunities. And it just – it wraps it all up, you know? I don't think that there was any follow-up. You had character development, you had high adventure, and then you had closure.
Well, what about this? They have a completely different story. It's possible they're going to have a completely different story. I mean, have the same concept, yeah, but have a different story. Because it doesn't have to stay with those characters and exactly what happened in that film. If they're going to reboot it, you know, you can reboot it any way you want, really.
Yeah. If Star Trek has taught us nothing.
Yeah.
You can reboot and change everything.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, look, the Stargate, you can go anywhere, right? As long as there's another gate on the other side. So you can end up in a lot of different worlds meeting a lot of different cultures. So yeah. you don't necessarily have to go to that one planet that they went to in the movie. And, you know, so I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
There you go.
I'm the devil.
I've Aren't known that y'all? For quite some time.
All right, there we go. Story number two. Before we move on to story number three, we want to ask for your feedback. In fact, we have a little feedback later on in the show. And the number, the voicemail number, if you'd like to leave feedback, if you want to use your vocal talents to let us know what you think of the show, 805-328-3966. Again, that's 805-328-3966. You can also leave us an email, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. All right, Vanessa, bring it up the rear. Let's wrap up the news with your story here.
You said rear. I don't know. Okay, so apparently there was a UFO sighting on September 3rd at a baseball game in Vancouver.
Oh.
Between the Vancouver Canadiens and the Everett Aqua Sox at Scotiabank Field's Nat Bailey Stadium. As if the name of that stadium can't get any longer. So in the sky above the right field section, an object resembling a flying saucer was spotted and videotaped. It appeared to be ringed by a row of bright lights. But here's the thing, is the UFO is now an IFO. It's an unidentified flying object.
Hang on. Sorry. Okay, I'm not going to try that again. Go ahead, Anessa. I'm sorry.
So Dave was trying to play the video, but like I was saying, the UFO on September 3rd is now an IFO, so it's no longer unidentified, but it is an identified flying object. So what was it? It was basically a marketing scheme by the Planetarium Theater at the Space Center. It underwent a $500,000 upgrade this summer, and they decided to build a drone to fly over the stadium as a teaser to create interest in this new planetarium. And apparently it resembles the planetarium. So let's see. Yeah, their upgrade was a $500,000 upgrade this summer. So the buzz that we are creating seems to be working, as attendance is 65%. Like, it's increased 65% compared to this time last year, said Space Center's executive director Rob Appleton in the official press release. And this video apparently has received more than 200,000 YouTube hits.
Hey, that's good publicity, you know?
It is good publicity. There was a lot of, I guess, people very skeptic, like a lot of skepticism around the video, just because it's easy nowadays to create a video of a UFO or supposed UFO just with software. So,
but this was in, a lot of people saw this, right? This is out in the public.
Yeah, it was over a stadium, so a lot of people are going to see this. And it was basically shaped like their new planetarium, and they flew it around the city of Vancouver. So
it looks like a quadcopter, just with a big dome over it.
It really is. I'm going to play the little snippet of video. You can see people pointing. And off in the distance.
I'm zooming in. Oh, wow.
There,
that
see,
would
there
freak
it is.
Me out if I saw that. I'd be like, yeah, that's a UFO.
Oh,
well,
I
the interesting
see.
Thing, and somebody brought this up, is if you, and I apologize for the people who aren't watching the video, if you think about that, the video shots are of the crowd. It starts out with the crowd starting to point, and then the video goes to the UFO, and then it's off to the right-hand side to see crowd reaction. If it were an actual person going, holy crap, I just saw a UFO, you'd have people like focused in tight on it and watching where it went. you'd hear some kind of commentary of somebody going, oh my God, I can't believe I'm just seeing this. It's a UFO over the trees. It never did that. It was a very short video. So
do you think
a lot of people thought it was a hoax right off the bat. But here's an actual – the center image here, again, if you are seeing the video feed live or
YouTube,
recorded,
YouTube.com/GalacticNetcast. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
There you go. Bam. The picture on the left-hand side is the UFO from the video. The center image is like a close-up what the actual drone looks like in the daylight, unlit. They put out a promotional video of what the planetarium looks like, and that's what this shape here is.
Okay.
In the video, it's a two UFOs kind of flying together, and then one lands and the other takes off, and the shape here, this quote-unquote UFO, is what the planetarium actually looks like.
Okay. Interesting. We need to start doing a segment, maybe not necessarily on this show, but somebody needs to start doing a segment somewhere on the internet, the hoaxes of the week. Because this was quite the week of hoaxes, because you had that, and then you had the whole twerking video, the girl falling down on her glass.
Oh, yeah, and then it was Jimmy Kimmel.
Jimmy Kimmel, yeah.
Thanks, Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah. So I suggest that somebody does a podcast or a blog, Hoaxes of the Week, and that would be one of them right there. It's a cool story.
It's sad news if you end up with a week without any noticeable hoaxes.
Then you got to start making up your own hoax.
Yeah.
No, this is a cool story.
Oh, yes.
This is 200,000 YouTube hits. That's pretty good.
It is for a planetarium.
I mean, it's no.
But no, I think it's a really smart idea to like get people's attention. Cause,
yes,
I mean,
and no. The thing that really kind of bugs me about it is we've now reached a point where we have a level of cynicism because the technology exists for anybody to create a video or create a photo and go, oh, look here's a UFO. How are you going to document believable UFO encounters if the technology exists for you to just, pull out a video from your rectum and here you go, here's a UFO, and then everybody talks about it and nobody knows if it's real or not. I just used rectum in that whole thing there.
Very good. I will capture that, and that will be on the soundboard next week.
That's awesome. What's the other saying that I have, Dave?
Hang on. I got to open the soundboard. Right here.
And whack off.
Whack off.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right.
And whack off.
Yeah, a little bit louder. There you go. No, this is cool. I could see your point, though, Brad. It's good publicity for the planetarium, but I can see where you're coming from, where you don't really know what's real anymore in this day and age,
Yeah, like you really don't know, but I mean, as far as publicity for the planetarium, I think it's a really good idea, because a lot of people, well, at least around here, they don't know where the planetariums are. Like, they will call and be like, oh, I didn't know that you guys existed. Are there any other planetariums in the Dallas-Fort Worth area? And there's several, but nobody knows about it.
That's too bad.
So I think that's a really great way to bring attention to it, because then at the very least, people know that it's there, which means probably at some point they're like, hey, let's go check out the planetarium. And they wouldn't have before.
That's really too bad, because I have fond memories of growing up and going to the planetarium, sitting through the show. The planetarium show,
But sadly, planetariums aren't doing so well, and so at least a couple of them in the DFW area have closed.
That's too bad.
Like, even the one, there was one, I think, Garland, one in Garland that was basically used in the high schools. It shut down.
If they would have had a UFO flying around, they maybe would have survived.
So, the person that ran the planetarium was like, I don't know what I'm going to do for a job. They basically gave him a science job for like a year, and then I don't know if they kept him on after that or not.
Oh, science.
But it's a shame. Yeah. A lot of planetariums not doing the greatest, so I think that's brilliant.
All right, that's the news. Before we get into our creature feature, got to thank Audible.com for sponsoring this Galactic Netcast, and they are offering you a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the chance to check out their service. And of course, keeping in the theme of this podcast, our recommendation for Audible this week is a book called Voyagers. Not Voyager, Voyagers. And here's a brief synopsis I grabbed off of the Audible.com website. Stoner knew the fiery object hurtling toward the Earth was an alien spacecraft, but the world might never know. He was trapped in an iron cordon. Iron cordon? Cordon? C-O-R-D-O-N? Cordon?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Cordon?
Iron cordon of secrecy. For the discovery had shattered the world power balance, setting off a brutal struggle of supremacy that raged from the sacred halls of the Vatican to the corridors of the Kremlin and the Pentagon. The forces of fear and treachery would use any weapon at their command, from mind war to sabotage, to keep the world in the darkness. Aided by a brilliant Soviet linguist and a lovely young student, Stoner planned a desperate mission, a wild, heart-stopping gamble to preserve the legacy of the Star Voyager for all mankind. Sounds exciting, doesn't it?
Indeed.
So that is our pick for Audible.com. It's called Voyagers. It's the first of three books. So, you know, you like this book for your free pick. You actually sign up for the service, and then you'll be able to listen to the next two books. That's a great plan, I think. Go to audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts and always use that that promo code galacticnetcasts. Well, actually, there's no promo code. Just go to audibletrial.com/galacticnetcasts and sign up for Audible. And we thank them for their support of the Alien Invasion podcast.
Woohoo!
All right, let's do this.
And now it's time for Creature Feature.
A little bit loud. All right. Anessa, what's our pick this week?
You'll have to ask Brad, because I didn't prep.
I was looking down. I'm sorry. I saw your name, but that was under picks. We're working on Creature Feature here. So, Brad, what is this week's Creature Feature?
You know, I did a look for quote-unquote real aliens, and I've noticed that nothing really caught my attention this week. So I went back to the world of fiction and back to the world of DC Comics. And I chose probably one of the more iconic races, at least in the world of the Green Lanterns and the Green Lantern Corps. And that is the Helevenites. The Helevenites.
Helevenites?
Helevenites,
bless
yeah.
Gesundheit.
Thank you. Helevin is a arboreal world located in Sector 1014 in the world of the Green Lantern Corps. All of space is divided into sectors that each Green Lantern patrols. Sector 1014 is the home of the race of sentient rodent-like creatures nicknamed monks for their resemblance to chipmunks. Now, Helevin technology is roughly the equivalent of the early 21st century Earths. Its inhabitants generally prefer to live in trees rather than artificial structures. While the monks or the Helevenites are the dominant species of the planet, there are other intelligent races on Helevin that resemble anthropomorphic versions of moles, foxes, bears, and eagles. This anthropomorphic quality may also be a natural feature of the galaxy in which the Helevin resides, for nearby planets have similar inhabitants.
Hey, wait a second. This reminds me of the Guardians of the Galaxy, kind of. sort of, in the way that things, like animals?
At least for Rocket Raccoon, yes.
Okay, all right. Well, what about the tree what about the tree that was alive? The tree monster guy.
Oh, Groot?
Groot.
Yeah.
The tree monster guy.
The tree-like alien.
Okay.
Groot.
Sorry.
You know, there was a lot of, and here we go into comic book history, kids. Whee!
That's okay. No, it's fine.
The Shi'ar Empire from Marvel, the X-Men, there were, God, I can't remember the name of their organization, but they were kind of a ripoff of DC's Legion of Superheroes. So you saw a lot of, hey, they're doing this over here. Why don't we do this here? So it's not exactly like that, but it's kind of close, and people might be interested that, like, this book over here.
It's kind of like,
so,
Coke and Pepsi.
Yeah. Not unlike that. So, yeah, you find some similarities in certain respects, like Groot. Like Earth, the 11 appears to spawn individuals who possess the ability to overcome great fear, which is a quality needed to be a Green Lantern. And there have been two 11ites who have been chosen to be members of the Green Lantern Corps, namely Chip. and B'dig.
All right.
At least interesting name. It's pronounced, yes.
Now, are these guys, well, are they the size of a chipmunk, or are they like human-sized chipmunks?
They are not human-sized. They're like when Chip stood, and he was bipedal, he was probably about 3.5 feet tall.
Like hobbit sized.
Females, yeah, somewhere between 2 to 3 feet tall now that I think about it. So larger obviously than our chipmunks or squirrels, but yeah. And oh, he looked adorable, but he really kinda whooped some ass, so
Where is the gopher races in the galaxy? I want to see a gopher alien.
Well, you might have found them on 11 because they had a lot of rodent-like creatures.
But he'd have to do the dance from Caddyshack. and the head's greenkeeper would have to tell Bill Murray to kill all the gophers, and then Bill Murray would get it confused with golfers, and he'd say, if I killed all the golfers, they'd lock me up and throw away the key. Sorry.
Are we still recording? Are we doing Alien Invasion still?
Where are we?
Suddenly it's Caddyshack.
I just had to. I just love that line. If I kill all the golfers, they'd lock me up and throw away the key. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Okay. Say that, and that's my creature feature.
Yay! Good job, Brad.
Woo-hoo.
All right. Elevenites. Elevenites.
Bless you.
All right. All right. I challenge you, Brad. I challenge you. Every pick, every creature feature, I think you should start doing a creature from the comic books, because you're the only person that teaches me about comic books, and I love that.
Okay.
So go ahead, continue. I love it.
All right.
Love it, love it, love it. All right. Before we go on to our picks, let's thank our other sponsor, Stitcher Smart Radio.
Yay!
You want to listen to podcasts, but you don't want to download, onto your phone. You don't want to use up valuable space, that small amount of space you have left because you download so many apps. Well, get an app called Stitcher Smart Radio, and you can stream the shows that you want, like the Galactic Netcast shows. Go to stitcher.com/galacticnetcasts, and then enter the promo code GALACTICNETCASTS, and you'll be up and running. You'll be going to the races with Stitcher Smart Radio. Looks like you both are doing something. Should I be aware of?
Pulling up my app here. Had to listen to the latest episode of Nerd Poker.
Oh yeah.
Brian Posehn's D&D. They play D&D for an hour and a half and they record it, and they've got like the full, and yeah, it's probably really hard to see, but they've got like full radio setup. They've got mics on,
yeah,
on booms there and the whole nine yards. It's amazing how they've got that set up. And I've been listening to The Nerdist quite a bit.
You still listening to the, what's that, economic podcast?
Marketplace.
Marketplace, yes. Marketplace. Marketplace Money?
Nope, just this is just Marketplace.
Okay. All right. So you can take Brad's examples, listen to those shows, or anyone you want. And great thing about Stitcher is once you load up your queue, Stitcher will take a look at it and go, hey, since you like this, you may also like this. That's the smart station feature with Stitcher. And the best part is this is all absolutely free. The only thing you'll be paying for is your phone, your device, and you don't even need that. You can get Stitcher on your browser if you wanted to. And, of course, you'll be paying for data, but that's it. The app is free. The service is free. So check it out, stitcher.com/galacticnetcasts. Again,
And so many programs that they have on there. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. And we're pretty high up there. We're ranked pretty highly on Stitcher. So I want to thank everybody who listens.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody who listens to us on Stitcher.
Yay!
And don't forget that promo code GALACTICNETCASTS. And we wish that you would, if you're going to sign up for Stitcher, go to that URL and enter the promo code, because that shows Stitcher that we're actually sending people their way. So that would be great of you. All right. Our final section on the alien invasion is picks. Let's start with Anessa. What do you got?
I have a movie that I watched called The Lost Skeleton of Cadavera.
Abracadabra.
Yeah. No. It was made in 2001. It's basically, it's another one of the recreations of a 1950s cheesy sci-fi movie. And this has to deal with a scientist who's very dedicated, and they keep repeating that he's a scientist, in case you forgot. It's like, I'm doing science work. Let's go do science. I'm too busy to do anything else. I'm doing science. So he's very science-oriented. And so him, the scientist, and his wife go to a cabin on basically like in the woods. And they're there because he wants to try to find this meteorite at this point. They keep saying meteor, but it's a meteorite because it's hit the Earth. So they're trying to find this meteorite, and it's made of an element called atmospherium.
That sounds so made up. Oh, my God.
Nice.
I'm happy that it wasn't unobtainium.
Yeah, I know.
So it's atmospherium, and apparently it's supposed to change science for everybody. And it's supposed to be like this really concentrated fuel source that we could use to get to the moon and back, because that's how awesome atmospherium is. And at the same time, there's another scientist, I guess an evil scientist, who's trying to find the lost skeleton of Cadavera and bring him back to life and have him, I guess, kind of take over the world sort of thing. I don't know. But the only way to bring back this lost skeleton of Cadavera is to have atmospherium.
I knew you were going to say that.
Of course.
Of course. So I'm pretty sure they probably could have cut back like 15, 20 minutes just of dialogue. Because at least for the first chunk of the movie, either I got used to it, or they cut back a little bit on the repetitiveness. But there's this one scene where it's like the next morning, and the scientist and wife are going to go and try to find the meteorite. And she stops because she has a bad feeling, because that's how all of these start. Like, oh, this doesn't feel right. That's really creepy. And so, like, the husband asks her, you know, like, so what's wrong? And she says, I don't know. Nothing I can put my finger on. Not something I can see or touch or feel, but something I can't quite see or touch or feel my finger on.
Who wrote the dialogue for this stupid movie?
I don't know. And the acting was just so cheesy.
No, but that, I mean, but that really fits in with the 1950s.
It really does. But
style.
I think they overdid it, at least at the very beginning, because that was like the dialogue for like the first 15 minutes of the movie was, I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to say this again. And at some point, there's these aliens that end up landing on Earth, and they can't get off the planet because they also need atmospherium and they're out of fuel. So it's cheesy. Like, at first I was like, oh my god, I can't stand this movie, but towards the end I actually liked it. Okay, so I don't know, maybe it grew on me. But if you're bored and you have an hour and a half to kill and you don't mind hearing cheesy lines like that, then by all means, watch this movie. It's on Netflix.
We need to start categorizing our picks. Like, and that's one of the categories. If you're bored and have nothing to do, then watch this.
Yeah. And yeah, just shake my head. But it was funny because, like, these aliens were trying to, like, blend in with the humans. And when they would sit, they're like, okay, bend in the middle. And they would, like, bend and then sit down, like, really abruptly. So they would bend forward with their knees not bent. So they would bend forward, then bend their knees, and then sit back up.
So do you think it was cheesy on purpose because they were trying to be a 1950s?
Oh, yeah. It was most definitely cheesy on purpose. Like, it was almost to the point that it was, well, it was to the point that it was exaggerated. And you, of course, have to have your cheesy monster. So it's like this guy in a suit with, like, the mask has, like, three eyes, and it's got, like, these different things. And when he walks towards the camera, I don't know why, it always makes me think of, like, Nosferatu, like the finger thing where he was doing this every time he might come up to the camera. And then I think once or twice it actually changed to first person view for the monster. But yeah, for the most part, it was a mutant.
Oh, God.
So that escaped from the alien ship that they were transporting to some other planet. Because, of course, they have to transport something and then something has to get loose. And it made me think of Alien Trespass, because it was the same sort of theme. Like, alien gets stuck on Earth or something, and their prisoner escapes, and then they have to try to find the prisoner and then get it back on the ship and then go. And it was kind of the same thing, but the ship also needed fuel. So, like, I don't know.
Refresh my memory. Did you watch Alien Trespass as a pick for Alien Invasion?
I did.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
That one I watched through Amazon Prime.
Okay.
And that one was actually done by one of the writers, I think, for the X-Files.
Oh, this one or Alien Trespass?
No, the Alien Trespass. Okay. This one, I don't remember who did it, but yeah, it's really cheesy and exaggerated, and I think Rotten Tomatoes gave it like 53%.
Oh.
Or no, that's the critics' rating. Audience apparently liked it at 82%.
Okay.
So, I don't know. Maybe the critics are way more harsh on the movie, or the audience has absolutely no standards.
I think it's a little bit of both.
Well, I'm also kind of thinking that when you watch this movie, that's what you expect to see, is cheesy 50s style sci-fi with bad acting, cheesy monster, and your stereotypical, like, oh, the movie's going to start off with someone having a bad feeling about these woods. And we're going to name things that are totally uninviting, but people are still going to go there anyway, like Death Pass and Dead Man's Trail and whatnot.
Gee, I wonder how it got its name.
So, yeah, there was a lot going on, but it was pretty entertaining, and I'm not going to say much more because then that would give it away and take away the fun.
All right. Good job. Thank you, Inessa.
You're welcome.
I'm going to wash out our bad science with some good science before before Brad comes back in with some bad science again, I think.
Hell yeah.
My pick is real life stuff. It's a TED Talk. You guys are familiar with the TED Talks, right?
Heck yeah.
Yeah,
I've never heard of such thing.
You are lying. You're a liar. You're a lying liar, Inessa.
I'm sorry, but we have to break up.
Aww.
Anyways, TED Talks, if you're not familiar, they've been going on for about 20 years or something like that, where experts in fields will get up and talk about a certain thing, a certain subject, and you can watch them for free all over the internet. If you have Netflix, they're grouped together. And the one I got it from, the group of TED Talks I got this one from was like Star Talks or something like that. I forget exactly the name. But the one I watched and the one I'm recommending, the pick is from Garrick Israelian. His talk was titled How I knew I was going to screw this up.
Spectroscopy could reveal alien life.
Thank you very much. And if you're not familiar with spectroscopy...
I have to say spectroscopy more than I would like.
Okay. I figured that you'd be boned up on this, Inessa. you'd know about this. It's basically... it takes images and you look at the actual spectrum, the colors of the spectrum of... Like, you'll look at a star... And it'll show different colors, and the colors represent different like elements, right? Am I getting that right? Okay. So
right, it's basically the stars emit light. They use a spectroscope to break up the light into various colors, and then they look at the concentration of colors along the spectrum, and that's how they identify elements.
And he's saying that. We're getting really damn close to being able to use this technology to identify planets with habitable life, because you look at a planet, you look at the light spectrum from a planet, and you'll be able to tell if there's like the right elements for life, like oxygen, CO2, mm-hmm. water. And it was a very interesting talk. Like I watched this like late last night, and it actually, I was tired as hell. But it kept me interested. Like, I actually learned something right before I went to bed last night, which never happens.
And didn't I have this idea, like, last week or something?
I think so, yeah. And this is one of the reasons why I wanted to watch this and wanted to have it as my pick, because it's along the same lines of what we talked about last week. So I think that you would really enjoy this, Inessa. This is right up your alley. I mean... It's your address. It's your house is what it is. And he was really funny. You know, he cracked up the audience. You'd think that a guy like in this field, you'd be very dry. But he was really interesting and entertaining. And he talked about how these
spectroscopy.
See, I can't see this.
You can do it, Dave.
These people doing this job will look at these readouts.
Spectroscopists.
Yes. They'll look at these readouts for days and weeks and months. They'll study the same readout and just, I don't know how you could do that. Look at just the one readout for that long a time to interpret what this means. It's kind of like those guys that feel somebody's scalp. To figure out, you know...
Phrenologist?
Yeah, phrenologist. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think part of it also has to do with the fact that I'm sure this gets processed through computers, and you have to look at the data and probably compare the data over a period of time to see if there's any variation. So that's probably a lot to do with it. But I mean, if they're actually looking at the images of the spectrum, then, like, of course your eyes are going to see a little different than somebody else's. So you have to, like, make sure that everything's consistent, and, like, before you can actually present it, you have to make sure that it's repeatable. So they probably do collect a bunch of data and then just keep studying that chunk of data to make sure that everything's consistent and be like, okay, now we are pretty positive that this planet contains oxygen and, like, whatever other elements, unobtainium and atmospherium. And
apparently this guy was the guy that, like, discovered the first supermassive black hole using this technology. So he's smart.
Oh, cool.
He's smart. He knows what he's talking about. So I highly recommend checking out this TED Talk. You can find it on YouTube. You can just Google TED Talk, and you'll find
spectroscopy.
And you'll discover.
Did he discover it while it was eating?
What, eating?
Eating, because you don't see black holes with, like, a telescope, so there's no spectrum to view unless they were looking at a different wavelength of light, or unless there was a star near enough that it was starting to eat the star and it was emitting.
You'd almost have
excess
to.
Excess energy.
Yeah, you'd have to discover it while it's eating. While it's eating, Anessa.
Om nom nom, stars. Om nom nom, planets.
Come on, Brad.
I will now recreate a black hole.
Okay, Brad is the actual black hole, and the chips are elements in space.
Stars and planets.
Planets and
I'm
meteors.
Stripping away a star, and the star tastes suspiciously like cheesy garlic bread Lay's potato chips.
That's, you got a lot. That, those got a lot going on. That's a busy chip.
I haven't tried it though. It sounds like it would be good.
All right. While Brad is finishing his digestion there. I highly recommend checking out this TED Talk, and then you will discover the wonderful world of TED Talks, because there's a bunch of them on a bunch of different topics. I mean, like, for God's sake, Stephen Hawking did a TED Talk. You know, presidents of countries have done TED Talks. Celebrities have done TED Talks. So
celebrities, kids,
everything. Yeah, it's
musicians.
It's a really great organization. So
hell, I've even done a TED Talk.
You lie.
Hells yeah.
No, I have not.
You did a Bob Talk.
Bob Talk.
Not as good as TED, but they try. All right, Brad. What's your pick this week?
Oh, it's a spectacularly crappy 1980s sci-fi film called Creature.
Gee, I can't tell how bad it is by the title.
Well, I mean, watching this movie, I kept thinking about how it really felt like they were trying to recapture some of the tension and excitement in the movie Alien.
Alien, yep. I thought the same thing.
An Alien, of course, being filmed or released in 1979. It's such a good movie. And trying to mentally compare this creature movie to Alien is asinine at best, because wow, it reeks of the 80s. To the hairstyles, to the clothing worn, to the
the vector graphics of the space station or the spaceships?
Yeah, there's even that too, because in the future we only have big flash cameras and vector graphics. But we had awesome spaceships in the future. So, and like any good 80s film, you had excessive bits of blood, nudity, which, you know,
nudity
is awesome. Yes, I totally purposely said nudity. That's my tip of the hat to Radar from MASH. And so was it really interesting is one character in the movie actually played Ferris Bueller's dad from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, excellent.
As the unlikable corporate. There's two financial entities. You have the U.S. and West Germany in the future.
Okay. That one name dates it by itself. West yes. Germany.
Yes, yep. Exactly. They're rivals for technology, essentially. These two large corporations are trying to best the other and create new technology that people will use. And Ferris Bueller's dad, as I will now affectionately call him, is, you know, like Paul Reiser's character in Aliens?
Yeah.
Is the Weyland Yutani, you know, he's kind of he's in charge of the mission, but he's not the captain.
Mm-hmm.
And a complete unlikable ass. That was his role.
He's like a corporate representative.
Ferris Bueller's dad. Yeah, as the corporate representative for whatever the name of their corporation is. It's unimportant. But because of his greed and wanting to beat the other company, he has them land poorly and immediately on the moon Titan,
mm-hmm.
Next to the rival company's ship, and it crashes through a layer of the ice on Titan, and it totally trashes their ship. So now they're stranded on Titan, and they have to find a way to get off of Titan, and then they find out that yes, the West German company did get there first, but most of them are dead. And now they have a mystery to solve as to why and what's going on.
Hang on. I got to check something real quick. I think I had this as a pick on Time Traveling Robots in Space or The Alien Invasion. I swear to God I had this. It sounds so familiar. Okay, continue talking. I'm going to research this real quick.
Here's the quick IMDb write up on it. A crew of scientists arrive on a far cold planet. Nah. It's the moon Titan, to examine archaic artifacts of unknown origin. They discover that their German enemies already have a ship there. When they seek their help after a failed landing, they only find the Germans' bodies, obviously slaughtered by one of the archaic creatures, awoken to new life. Now the alien is after them. Dun, dun, dun.
Okay, no, I had this as my pick.
Oh, really?
Had to have been a while ago.
Maybe it was. I think it was the week that you guys. What you were in Texas, Brad?
Really?
It's possible.
Shut up.
It's okay though. It's always good to get somebody else's impression of a movie. So go continue. That's just funny that we.
It's
picked
okay.
The same thing.
Dave's done picks that I've already done before, yeah. And vice versa. So yeah. It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like I said, it reeks of the 80s, the special effects, even the practical effects that they have by the standards of the 80s, not all that good. You don't see the creature much, which is...
probably a good thing.
It's a good thing, but I think they also were trying to play up, you know, an alien. You didn't really
right.
see the alien too much until the very end. So they wanted to play up the whole tension and the suspense of what the creature actually looked like.
People kept on just disappearing and dying through the entire movie, pretty much.
Yeah, it's like nobody paid attention to anything that anybody said, and oh, I'm gonna wander off outside.
I'm gonna do it anyway.
Oh, my dead girlfriend's out on the planet surface, and she's not wearing a helmet, and I know it's 277 degrees below zero, and she's fine. Blah. You know, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, they were the biggest group of gullible people I've ever seen.
Oh yeah.
And somehow they managed to survive, like. -277 degrees below zero without like dying like that or freezing or losing limbs. The most someone got a bloody nose.
Yeah. and if you guys couldn't tell, that was a movie that Anessa and I saw together because.
See,
that's what we do. That's our date night. We watch a really shitty sci-fi movie together.
See, I feel like I've shared experience with you guys. You know, I feel like I've been on your date with you guys because I've watched
Because you've seen this movie,
yes,
too.
Yes.
And that
it's good
was
to hang out as a group.
I'm the
we
third.
Were doing little bits of MST3K through the film, and it's again, this will be under the classification. Boy, if you have an hour and a half of your life that you just want to set on fire and you don't really care about, watch this steaming pile.
I think when I used this as a pick, I prefaced it by saying I found this new genre of films on Netflix that I'm kind of addicted to now. It's these bad... Oh, it's space horror. I called it space horror,
yeah.
Basically.
And I was addicted to that, too, in the in the late 80s. You know, when you're time-traveling robots in space, you mentioned Life Force. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I saw that movie. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Any chance to see Matilda May naked when I was that age? Absolutely. I was totally on board for that.
And Patrick Stewart was in that movie, too.
Yes, he was. Patrick Stewart with some hair on his head.
Yeah, it was... He was not good. This is pre-Star Trek, actually.
Yeah. It's not a good film at all.
No.
And they were definitely space vampires.
Yeah. All right.
And now we've totally crossed shows.
Yeah, no,
point.
It's weird. Well, we cross shows a lot. It's a weird, what do you call it, when families have sex.
What?
Incest?
Incestuous.
Really?
Incestuous.
I'm talking about crossovers, and you're talking
and
about...
And he's like, incest!
Banging your first cousin like we're from West Virginia? Hello?
Hey, speaking of that, we have a voicemail from Jason in Kansas.
Which isn't even remotely close to West Virginia.
No, you will find out why I said it that way. So just let's listen to what Jason
has to say. Was he originally from Alabama?
Who's Jason?
Hey, everybody, it's Jason from Kansas. Just listen to the latest episode of Alien Invasion, and I literally laughed so hard I almost fell over. I was at work, like usual, and I listened to you guys, but it was spot on. It was good. Sorry it's been so long since I've called in. I've been real busy around here. I got a scare. I heard rumor that there was alien butt spiders from Alabama or somewhere that were coming up here, and I got scared, but then I checked Snopes, thankfully, and it was just false. Whew. But anyways, a little spot of news. It was tragic, but I shaved the epic beard, but, it'll grow back bigger, stronger, and faster.
Oh, no!
Anyways, like I said, I just wanted to call in and say hey to you guys, and still listening every week. Still love the show. You guys take it easy, and I'll catch up with you later.
No, Jason, why did you have to shave off your beard? It was so epic.
I saw his picture on Facebook.
Yeah, it's
and
weird.
I was surprised.
Yeah, I think I was talking with Vanessa on the phone. I'm like, oh, Jason shaved his beard. And she's like, what? I'm like, no, seriously.
It's like, I must see.
You can be, you fellow listeners can be just like Jason and become like friends
shave
to us.
Shave your beards too?
Shave your beards or become friends to us by reaching out and sending us a voicemail. We want to hear from you. And you can maybe become a regular just like Jason has. 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Also, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. Just type in Galactic Netcasts. We're also on YouTube, youtube.com/galacticnetcasts. And, of course, our main website, galacticnetcasts.com. Don't forget to subscribe to us. We're on the iTunes. We're on the Stitcher. Again, just search for Galactic Netcast. And that's going to do it for this Galactic Netcast, the Alien Invasion number 82. Thanks for joining us. Final thoughts, guys. Of course, with Brad's final thought, he's got his nose glasses on.
Yes.
I feel like I need a monocle now. My boyfriend has the pince-nez. I need a monocle.
And
need to class it up. Or really, the little spectacles. I forget what they're called with the little
opera glasses.
Yes.
The opera glasses.
Yes. And I need to get a patch.
Yes.
I need a patch. Arr.
Yarr. Yarr. There she be. Aliens.
All right.
Prepare to be boarded. Arr.
You know,
wait, that's my pirate.
Timbers.
That's my pirate pickup line. Pirate pickup line. You know, prepare to be boarded.
You know, you know why they wore patches, right? Because they would board a vessel, and they would have one of their eyes in darkness all the time. So they'd once they would board the enemy's vessel, they'd go underneath, you know, where it's dark, and switch the patch over to the other eye, and the one eye that's been covered is already used to the darkness.
That is absolutely correct. They did that on Mythbusters.
Yep.
And it worked.
All right.
It does. Your pupils get to dilate. Otherwise, they have to hang out in the belly of the ship for like 10 or 15 minutes before they can see.
I think the cones are more... they're warmed up and ready to go. I think it's the cones and not the rods. I always get those confused.
Well, remember, but your pupils get bigger to allow more light, and it's a bigger aperture. Because whenever you go from darkness after you've been hanging out outside for a while and it's been dark, and then you come inside to the bright light, your pupils like go, wah, to let in less light.
Wah.
Yes.
Wah.
All right.
That's exactly what they do.
Final thoughts. Let's get this show wrapped up.
Final thoughts. I want World's End to come to my neck of the woods. I'm really kind of pissed off it's not here. Grr.
It's a good movie. It's a very good movie.
I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
All right, Anessa, what's your final thought?
I want a monocle.
All right. With that, thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.